Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the program. My guest is Cheryl Crumley. Cheryl, thanks for joining me. Cheryl Crumley is here. She is the author of The Devil in D.C., Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington. You know, the name itself really intrigued me, Cheryl. And I haven't spoken with you in a while. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Oh no, I love to chat with you. Thanks.
And of course, you have an archive up in WorldNet Daily, which is excellent. I wanted to just get, as I said, I haven't spoken with you in a while. I've always respected your opinion, and wanted to get your take on what I would call euphemistically the Trump phenomena. What do you make of Donald Trump?
Right. Well, first and foremost, I'm not surprised that he's doing that well with voters. I think a huge issue for Americans and even particularly evangelicals, those of a Christian faith, is immigration. And, you know, this is what he's harped on. And the other part that he's brought to the forefront is that America doesn't have to sit back and be the patsy for the rest of the world. This present administration has painted America as just the same as any other nation. And I think most Americans want to feel proud about our country again. So I'm heartened by Trump's ability to bring those two issues to the forefront.
The main criticism, of course, of Trump is that he can be just too outspoken and rude and all of that. And, you know, there's certainly some truth to that. But yet, underlying that are much more serious matters with regard to the appeal of his candidacy, and I'm particularly interested in what's happening on the Republican side. I mean, of course, the left wing is going to be attacking any Republican. It doesn't matter who they are. They're the enemy of the people. They're going to be denounced. But in the case of Trump, I've never seen anything like this internecine war that seems to be going on in the Republican Party, almost to the extent that I've heard a rumor, and I don't know if you could substantiate it, that Jeb Bush and some of these sort of Eastern Seaboard liberal Republicans, they're actually raising money to try to out-primary any politician nationally who is coming out in favor of Trump.
Well, the establishment Republicans have met on a couple different occasions. It's been reported as they've met in secret, but it's really not so secret when the mass media is picking up on it. And the focus of these meetings, both of which occurred in the last couple weeks, one at Sea Island and the other, I believe it was just up here in D.C., was how to take Trump out. You know, that's just a disgusting attitude for Republicans to have against one of their own declared candidates. And what's worse is that since Trump is the front runner, it's basically the establishment Republicans putting the American people in a poor light, as if those who support Trump aren't smart enough to understand what's going on politically, and they need these establishment elite-type politicians to guide them down the path that they should be taking.
You know, I've never seen anything like it. I'm somewhat of a student of history, and I can't think of an example in history where one of the major parties has so utterly gone after their front runner, their standard bearer. I know that the establishment didn't like Reagan, but the attack on Trump is so unprecedented that they seem to be willing to, you know, destroy the goose in order to, you know, steal the golden eggs in order to destroy the goose. I mean, they don't care. I mean, they're willing to vote for Clinton or anyone to stop Trump. It's really this emotional thing.
And, you know, you touch on a point that's important. There have been certain Republicans who have come out and said that they would rather vote for the Democratic nominee than they would for Trump. And, you know, what kind of Republican is that? But what's even worse is these, you know, these same people who criticize Trump for being so offensive and so blunt in his rhetoric, they don't mind it when they themselves or those of their ilk turn around and slam Trump and call him names in public. Look at what Mitt Romney just came out a couple weeks ago and did with that vicious press conference. It shocked me because I was never a big Mitt Romney fan, but I did believe that he was a guy who was classy. And, you know, he was constrained and he had a faith in some higher being that, you know, basically made him a candidate on the political trail that was resistant to the idea of attacking his political opponents. He was so gracious to Obama, but come out against Trump and it's all, you know, holds barred.
Okay, my guest is Cheryl Trumley. Her column is accounted by World Net Daily exclusively. Her latest book, The Devil in D.C., Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington, is available, I assume, everywhere, Cheryl?
Yes, WND Books, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles. If you want to know some real solutions to take right now to win back the country from atheists and progressives, buy my book because it's full of solutions.
Great. And, Cheryl, you know, there's something I again think that something really rotten in Denmark, as Shakespeare, to paraphrase, with regard to this attack on Trump. And I think that Trump is unleashing certain forces in this country. Whether or not he personally is about this, I have no idea. I think he is because he seems to be someone who is so unprecedentedly honest in his enunciations. I've heard him over the years speak that, you know, he just lets the cat out of the bag. But he is standing up for a pretty strenuous nationalism, a sovereignty, which is something that is driving the establishment crazy as they try to work toward the North American Union, as they try to work toward this sort of internationalization agenda. What George Bush Sr. called the New World Order. That's not my words, it was his. And Trump, on the other hand, is saying we have to defend the nation, we have to build the wall in order to defend our borders. He's basically saying the same thing that all the candidates are saying with regard to the borders, including Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, except with Trump, you know he actually means it, or he's actually telling the truth. He will build the wall, you know, and that's driving them crazy.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head right there when you talk about, you know, Republicans and Democrats both in recent years have been moving toward this system of government that looks more at the global view than sovereign view. Even, you know, Supreme Court justices have talked about the need to take into consideration international law, not just simply U.S. law. And this is unprecedented in American history. This has been a slow creep of globalism overpowering our Constitution and our Democratic Republic. And now here comes Trump saying, no, we need to reverse this. We need to make America first. We need to put America at the forefront of all things worldly now. And I think you're right. I'm not positive he's going to be able to do all the things that he promises on the campaign trail, but it sure is nice hearing somebody talk about America being the greatest country in the world again. And it's great to hear somebody talk about the need to curtail this amnesty immigration policy that's been seeping into Capitol Hill.
Mm. And dare I suggest he actually sounds like an old-fashioned American. You know, it's something that we almost are shaky saying that about because we think that it has a pejorative element to it. But he is standing up for an old-fashioned concept, not just for this country, but I would contend for all sovereign nations, and that is the value of national sovereignty. It's an institution that has emerged over many millennia. It is a progressive idea, this idea that peoples who share certain common interests would come together and form a sovereign nation state in order to conduct certain functions that you cannot do on your own. I mean, this is a good thing. This is something that's progressive, and all the great wars of the 20th century have been attempts to destroy sovereignty, not enhance it. So we have to really understand the importance of sovereignty, that is something that's worth defending, not because it's traditional, but because it's the future. Do we want to control our own futures? You know, do we want to control our own lives? Do we believe in the limited democratic government where we have a say? Or do we want to turn it over to some kind of a faceless international entity? And there are people in Washington, both Democrat and Republican, even some conservatives, who seem to think that there's some kind of a virtue in this idea that something like the nation state is something that should be gradually and slowly dismantled. I mean, Barack Obama, while in Cuba, of all places, when he heard about the terrorist attack, his response was, we have to come together as a world. You know, I mean, I don't know if you picked up on that.
Well, they turn it into the leftists and people that think borders don't matter. They turn it into an issue of compassion, whereas if you're on the other side, if you're somebody who favors national sovereignty and tight borders, you're painted as somebody who is not for people. You're cruel. You're cold-hearted. You're not compassionate. Whereas those who favor open borders and you know, just a steady flow of refugees, even though they haven't been vetted or anything, if you're for that, then you're compassionate. You love humanity, and that makes you a better person than those who want tight borders. And that's the difficulty of the situation that not just Trump, but others who want national sovereignty in this nation find themselves in. And it's something that we should not allow ourselves to be sucked into that rabbit hole. You know, just because we want borders does not mean we are not compassionate people. It just means that borders protect the nation that you have, the one that was forged by founding fathers as blessed by God. And the greatness of this nation that separates us from all others is that our rights come from God, not government.
Well, this whole idea that the national borders, you know, is somehow lacking in compassion, that's just classic communist agitprop. It couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, first of all, the American people are the most compassionate in history when it comes to giving charity and giving help and aid to our neighbors. I mean, we don't need to be lectured by anybody about that. And secondly, we should recognize that people who want to come here are trying to escape from these miserable socialist hellholes where and we should help them to develop themselves and their own economies and so that they can emulate us in a sense that is commensurate to their own cultures. I mean, we don't need to, we don't want to have nation building, which is another thing Trump is against. He's pointing out this idea that, we shouldn't be, goose-stepping around the world and trying to force other nations through a constant military war. You know, I was struck by Hillary Clinton's comments at AIPAC, where she seemed to be almost channeling the Bush administration neocon agenda. You know, this kind of idea of, and she also gave an interview with Chris Matthews where she openly defended George Bush in his war in Iraq. And this idea that America has to play this, quote, role in the world, unquote, with military boots on the ground and military might. Trump, on the other hand, in a sense similar to the way Bernie Sanders talks, except coming from a different place, is saying that America should not be involved in perpetual war around the world. We should be minding our own store and working with allies around the world to defeat enemies without necessarily intervening directly. Now, that also is something that I think drives the establishment nuts about him and about, for that matter, Sanders.
Well, wars are big business, and perpetual war really, is great business. And, if you look at Capitol Hill and you look at the legislators up there and you go through their records and their donations and political dealings and so forth, you can see a lot of them benefit from the companies that earn big money from overseas investments, overseas contracts, based on conflicts that we're involved in. And Trump's big mantra is, if we're in a war, we should be in it to win it. And as part of winning it, that means taking things like oil wells or taking things like arms and munitions and so forth that belong to the enemy that we have to declare to go to war in the first place. And that is something that those who gain big from military conflicts in this nation, including politicians, they don't like to hear because it cuts into their own personal purse strings and pocketbooks.
Trump has also been talking a protectionist game when it comes to foreign policy and economy, in that he has said that he wants to protect American jobs, he wants to protect American industry by using the old tariff system to ensure that when a company leaves the country, they're going to have to, they're not going to be able to financial incentive. They'll have to pay tariffs if they want to re-import products that they create overseas using practical slave labor. And this is an issue that's been debated in every election all the way back to Washington's time. It's a prerogative of Congress to set tariffs, Article 1, Section 8, tariff and trade regulation. And it's something that all of the other candidates, I believe, certainly, and I think that includes Ted Cruz, have said that they want to see a more of an internationalist, free trade, World Trade Organization type of a paradigm, where the United States essentially, in the interest of so-called free trade, gives up our ability and our congressional prerogative to control products and services entering into this country by use of tariffs. And I think that's another one of these issues that is upsetting the apple cart this year. What do you think?
Well, I agree. I think there's a lot of business interests that Trump, being a businessman, I like what he says about trade and tariffs and not entering any deals with other nations that puts America at a competitive disadvantage. I probably deviate a bit from a lot of Trump supporters who look at his business background as an automatic plus in politics. I've never been of the mind that a businessman is great in politics simply because a businessman mindset is to save money and grow, revenues and so forth for the company. But I look at growth in revenues. You're taking revenues from taxpayers, and if you set those aside in some sort of pot, that just means an overtaxation. So I deviate a bit. Thinking that Trump automatically with a business mind is a great politician, but when it comes to tariffs and trade and making deals that are competitive for America, not degrading or harmful for America, I think he's speaking the right tone.
I think so, and also being a businessman who actually knows people at this level of business, he's, I think at least from what we can tell, and we only know what we see here, but he seems to be saying that he is, as someone who understands what they're doing, because he's done it himself, he's going to come out against them. He's going to say, we have to put the interests of the country first, and we have to, have free trade. We also want free, national enterprise as a part of that bargain. That's part of the system that has always existed in this country. It goes back to Alexander Hamilton. Now, Trump is the third spoke on the wheel for Trump for me, and the thing that I am most personally inspired by, and that I'm actually awestruck by, is that it appears, and I don't know if it's going to stick, but it appears that Trump has stuck a major pin in this political correctness tyranny. The biggest weapon in the leftist arsenal is to accuse someone or some group of having, for example, something against black men and women, or having something against Muslim men and women, or having something against Hispanic men and women, or having something against gay men and women, or whoever else they want to conjure up. And it is a weapon that can destroy someone. They go up, they take out a microscope, and now with the so-called microaggression, they can almost say anything is a proof of this. It's like a witch hunt on speed, where they can, put someone under a microscope and say, aha, you looked the wrong way. You gave someone a glance the wrong way. It proves that you got something against them because they happen to be black. And Trump has stuck a pin in that in a way that I hope is going to last. If there's one thing he accomplishes in this election, it's that we don't have to be fearful anymore of this tyranny, of this totalitarianism. What do you think?
It is a fearful type of situation when you're afraid to speak the truth because the other side is going to attack you and personally just tear you apart. And I agree that Trump has tapped into that non-politically correct rhetoric, and it's resonating hugely with Americans. But I'll go even further and say that it's not just damaging to the individual to be targeted by the leftists for perceived non-politically correct statements. It's a danger to our nation. If you look at the whole radical Islamism scenarios going on and what our national security is based upon, it's based upon a White House that refuses to admit, because of political correctness, that it's radical Islamism that is the biggest danger facing the world and America right now. So when you take PC talk that far, it goes beyond just damaging an individual's reputation. It goes to the point where it can actually put an entire nation at a national security risk.
Well, I think you're actually being a little too gentle with the administration by saying they're worried about political correctness. I think that they have a deliberate agenda. They're bringing in almost 200,000 so-called Syrian refugees, Obama said the other day, by the end of his administration. And here in Boston, where I am, our mayor has said that he's going to take 50,000 of them in Boston. Now, that's not worried about political correctness. I mean, that's an active attempt to sort of reconstitute American society, frankly. And it's just a very, very dangerous situation, especially when Obama's own FBI director, James Comey, has gone on record as saying that there's no way to differentiate between the vast majority of Muslims who are not religious and the very few who are religious and who are trying to kill us. So, you know, when you have a situation like that, I think that Trump is saying we have to take a pause and try to figure this thing out. Now, I know that he doesn't speak in sophistic. He doesn't put on a phony British accent like John Kerry. But he's basically saying the same thing here. He's saying, you know, until we figure out who is religious and who isn't, and the religious are in an open war against Americans, and we know this because they've been killing us, we have to take a pause here and try to figure it out. And I think that the left's attempt to try to turn that around and say, aha, Donald Trump has something against Muslim men and women because they're Muslims, it's not sticking. You know, you could say, hey, I have something against the Islamic religion. Yeah, I think that's fine. I would say that myself. It's like I have something against the satanic religion. I mean, that's a matter of opinion. But it's nothing against Muslim people. Most Muslim people aren't religious. They're fine.
Well, he's just speaking, I think, what everybody in their homes is talking about around the coffee table. You know, people don't speak in politically correct terms to their family members and to their friends around the coffee table while they're talking about the problems facing America, particularly when it comes to border and national security issues. And Trump, like you said, he doesn't speak eloquently, and you can see what comes out of his mouth sometimes does not reach, the radars in his mind. There's the red flags that would go up to a political person just aren't present to Trump. But that's part of his charm with the American people, and that's part of why the American people are rallying behind him, because we're so sick and tired of the political campaign statements that are so carefully couched but don't really say anything. And here comes Trump. This is what I think. Take it or leave it. And if you don't like it, then, you know, too bad. Where I stand. Yeah.
Exactly. He speaks like he's reaching, regular people. You know, he's reaching the blue-collar people. It's interesting, even the head of the SEIU, a very liberal left-wing union, has said that he thinks that a large percentage of his rank and file are supporting Trump. I mean, Trump got his largest vote so far in any primary right here in my own state of Massachusetts. I mean, what does it tell you? He's crossing the line. I mean, he's reaching, you know, the vast number of people who are independent. He's reaching disgruntled Democrats. I mean, he's connecting with people because he's, as we've discussed, standing up for national ideas, you know, making sure that America gets a good deal in trade, making sure America gets a good deal in foreign affairs, you know, making sure we have a good deal on immigration. I mean, these are basics. And, regardless of whether he'd make a good president, I really, none of us have any idea. You know, he could be either good or bad, but he is unleashing positive energy in the American people. And the left, when they say, oh, well, he's releasing hatred, what they're doing is what they usually do. They're projecting, to use the Freudian term. You know, they're basically projecting on the rest of us their own values because they're the haters.
Yeah, Trump is actually taking a brave stand now, is in that he is representing for the left and those on even the right who don't like his messages. He's representing for the frustrated, disenfranchised American voter, and he's the one that is fielding all the arrows right now. You know, Trump isn't bringing a message of hatred. He is bringing out the angst and the outrage of the American public, and now the left is using him as the symbol, basically. He's representing the symbol of what Americans are speaking to themselves at home, and he's the one taking the hits for the regular Americans right now.
Right, and, you know, I've seen this happen from the left. You know, all of my adult life, you know, being here in Boston, where anyone who doesn't goose-step becomes this monstrous figure. I mean, it goes back to the way they handled Reagan. I mean, even George W. Bush, who, you know, with the most vile, hateful, vicious comments. I remember hearing, you know, little girls in the back seat of my car with my daughter when she was a young girl, driving them home from school, and hearing them telling nursery rhymes about Bush in the most disgusting terms. I mean, the kind of stuff that, you know, my parents would have washed my mouth out with soap, you know, and so I'm used to that. But they take it one step further with Trump, and when they compare him with Hitler. And when you have serious people like the New York Times comparing him to Hitler. And my response to that when people say that is that I honestly don't think that Donald Trump is that far left.
That's actually pretty suitable. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, really, I mean, come on. And meanwhile, Bernie's brown shirts are there storming into Trump rallies, and they're financed by former Nazi capo George Soros, who on 60 Minutes admitted that he not only admitted, but proudly discussed how as a teenager he was going around with his father in occupied Hungary and turning in Jewish households to the Nazis.
Right.
You know, this is who's behind that. I mean, talk about projecting.
Well, it's just,
anyway,
you know,
but Cheryl, we're reaching toward the end of the program, so I'd like you to take this opportunity to just let people know a little bit more about your book, where they can get it, and where they can read your excellent columns.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, you can get my book at WND Book, Barnes & Noble's, Amazon, or on my blog, CherylChumley.blogspot.com. And I write daily at WND.com, so you can see my stuff there. But the book is basically a solution-oriented guidebook. Every chapter gives recommendations for what patriots, Christian Americans, can do right now to take back the country from the atheists and progressives. Some of them are short-term solutions. Some of them are long-term solutions. But all of them are based in part on Founding Father principles and biblical principles. And I really hope the advice spreads like wildfire, because right now our country faces a huge danger, and we need this silent majority out there of patriotic Christian Americans to get off the couch and start getting more involved in politics and culture.
Well, you know, I can't wait to read it. Please ask your publisher to send me a copy, and I will have you back so we can discuss it, especially in this political season, and as we develop the proper tools to, you know, sort of have a counter-revolution, if you will, sort of be a counter-revolutionist. Cheryl, do you have any predictions?
As far as the election goes, I think actually Trump is going to go the whole way. As far as this country goes, I have great hope. America is still the light on the hill. Blessed by God is the greatest nation in the world. And I think Americans are coming to the point of frustration where they are not just hoping to act, but they're willing to act.
Hallelujah. Thank you very much. Cheryl Trumley, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Okay, God bless. And that is Cheryl Trumley. She is the WorldNet Daily columnist. She's the author of the seminal book, The Devil in D.C., Winning Back the Country from the Beast in Washington. And I want to thank you all for joining me this afternoon. Of course, my books are available at Amazon Kindle. Just put my name in the server, Chuck Morse, MORSE, like Morse code, and you shall see a plethora of books suddenly come up right before your eyes. My own daughter created the covers. I'm very proud of those. And, of course, my latest book, which hopefully will be published soon, is called Communism is Not Dead. I want to thank you all for joining me this afternoon, and have a very pleasant day.